welcome to AU to AZ. It's November the 22nd, 1 week after Miami Device. Rodney and myself did some Uber podcasts during Miami Device, and in this podcast edition, you'll be hearing our interview with Richard Wells from New Zealand. I hope you really enjoy the interview, and let's take it away.
So I'd like to start off this episode with
Uber podcast.
This Uber podcast with Ginny. We are actually all together again in Miami Device. And this time we have wrangled another person from down under. But actually he's not, which, you know, if you're a connoisseur of accents, if you want to call it that, you'll notice that he's not a Kiwi.
Or an Australian.
So with that said, we'll let our host introduce himself.
Hello, people. I'm Richard Wells, and I'm originally from England, and I live in New Zealand because it's slightly nicer.
Whereabouts in the UK are you from?
So I'm from Wiltshire, which is about an hour away from Stonehenge, if you've heard of that. It's an hour west of London, and we moved to New Zealand in 2006 because they have a fantastic country and they have a fantastic school system.
It's pretty cool.
So, yeah.
And you like the weather, so you went for the same sort of weather.
Yes. Auckland's nice. Auckland's got a nice climate.
So as opposed to windy Wellington.
As opposed to the windiest city in the world, recently ranked.
Really?
Yeah, and they would be proud of it, but they're trying to keep it quiet.
That's wind turbines.
Certainly, around the area.
So we had just picked up Richard from the St. Stephen School, where we were doing where Miami Device is located, on November 12th and 13th, and he's actually one of the presenters. So, Richard, what did you think of the school?
It's very nice. It's a very nice setting, very nice grounds, well resourced. Obviously, it's a private school, beautiful location, beautiful people.
Did you look in the classrooms and see what they were doing with their kids?
Yeah, I mean, coming from New Zealand, I'd say it was a fairly standard setup. They introduced it to me as, you know, these are conventional classrooms.
Okay.
Tables, you know, group tables for the kids and a, you know, whiteboard and projector and stuff. I seemed to get them excited about a sort of a new model that was being used in a few middle schools, grade 5 and such in New Zealand. So I'm going to be running through that tomorrow in my future of Ed presentation on the leadership track. But New Zealand's got it deals with the whole equity issue much better. So the average public school in New Zealand will be, in terms of the resourcing, the equipment and the quality of stuff within the classrooms, New Zealand public schools would match a lot of these private schools. Not so much for the grounds and the facilities,
right,
the bigger facilities, you know. But yeah, in terms of resourcing, where we fund public education really well. So
that's really good to hear. What's interesting too is that you are our second, third, no. We also interviewed Mark Anderson in the UK.
Okay. I've worked with Mark.
Yeah. Mark.
So it would be interesting.
He's coming down onto next year.
Oh.
Okay. It would be interesting to hear a little bit of how you talk and compare and contrast UK system with the New Zealand system, but you did a little bit of that. It's pretty standard, as you said earlier.
Yeah, the UK is still sort of fixated on a fixed curriculum. Okay. And so Mark, although, again, the resourcing is really good, Mark deals with schools that are well-resourced, lots of devices, lots of equipment, but the curriculum is fixed. It's dished out by the government.
Okay.
Well resourced. You get every as a new teacher. I started teaching in the UK, and as a new teacher, you get every. I received books with every single lesson, with accompanying CDs with accompanying PowerPoints. It's
wow.
I don't know if it's quite that prescribed now, but it's certainly very very prescribed. And New Zealand is, I would argue, is possibly one of the most future-focused countries in the world. And even just describing what we do in New Zealand to Americans just makes my job really easy. I can just come here and describe New Zealand, and Americans are kind of easily impressed by it. So
okay,
we generally have we're moving towards a full national system that is student driven, and the expectation is the students design their own education, their own learning, their own school day in mm-hmm. some cases.
So it's not quite problem or project-based learning. It's
we have an inquiry-based model.
Inquiry. Okay.
Yeah. So right down to grade 3.
Wow.
They'll be getting used to running their own inquiry, mm-hmm. and the nice thing about the whole system is that high school graduation is also predominantly based on your own personal inquiries, which you as a student are encouraged to match to the national, you know, skill-based standards and things.
So you still do have standards, and the students still have to be a part of that process and know what they need to do to be able to match it. So you haven't totally done away with some type of standard, which is good to hear. That would be something that would be interesting for me to absorb in case that was gone, but you still do have national standards.
Yeah. And we still have high schools going through the process of changing. So the system is there, ready to use. It's okay. In place. But we some schools are at the cutting edge and have their students and negotiating their own projects for a number of projects to ensure they get full high school graduation. Those projects are marked by the teachers along a thinking level, mm-hmm. What we call the solo taxonomy kind of approach.
Okay.
Do they have peer mediation at all?
Well.
Or peer moderation?
Not with between the students, no. But the teachers will grade the projects in terms of their thinking level and their, you know, the depth of understanding they're displaying for each of the skill standards.
Okay.
And they will then moderate a sample of those with another teacher in another school.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all done through the teachers. And then nationally, we will also send samples to a central, a teacher who is employed and trained as a central moderator to ensure that the whole country's, everything that's going on in the country is being graded at the same kind of standard for thinking level.
Okay.
Richard,
you said beautiful, right?
Okay.
Richard, just off the top of your head, what do you think has the greatest effect on student learning?
What has the greatest effect? I'd say from the outset, an expectation that you will look after yourself and you will learn to learn, I would say. The grade 5, grade 6 middle school example I'll be going through tomorrow is a school where all the grade 5 students run their own day. And they book in for their own tutorials and nothing is scheduled for them. They are expected to schedule and manage everything.
So how are you coping with the heat here?
In this Uber car, it's lovely because it's air conditioned. Outside, this is quite warm, quite humid. And apparently warmer than it normally is.
Yes.
So I come from England, so I'm struggling more than other people as well. I'm really enjoying Miami. It's good.
We're going to come back to Richard a little bit later.
All right, and now we're back in another Uber with Roberto as our driver. Really good driver, really patient. So we here for part 2, and we are now going back to the hotel, and here we are with Richard. So Richard, I have a question for you. Actually, Jenny has a question for you.
Yes. Richard, there's a lot of talk on intrinsic motivation and extrinsic motivation with students and learning. How do you come to grips with people who are really pushing for a lot of extrinsic motivation in their classrooms, and they're doing all sorts of programs, but that basically all boils down to it's extrinsically motivated? How do you work with that?
In New Zealand, I would guess our system is designed to
move away from those extrinsic motivations. We've been on a 10-year journey introducing our pretty future-focused assessment system, and it started when the teachers first adopted it. They took on their 20th century mindset with it, and it became a credit collecting system. So even though it's flexible, we still had students only really doing work if there were credits attached to it. And so it felt, so for my first 5 or 6 years in New Zealand, it felt that that was the kind of system I was in. But again, the teachers have gone through a journey and a bit of training from some experts in the government has made more and more teachers in New Zealand realize how best to use our flexible system. And we're now in a situation where more and more schools are getting the students to design their inquiry projects around their own interests and then worry about what those projects might pick up in terms of credits. So, and that's happening because we are getting better outcomes, and we're already seeing signs, and I've been around New Zealand seeing schools where there are definite signs of students having a much stronger sense of independence, and not feeling that they rely on a system to be providing anything for them. And so this year, in my sort of travels, I've seen a lot of examples of students getting on with work because it's important to them, because they had such a major hand in designing what they would be doing. And the teachers say that their whole job is now so much easier. And in two of the cases I went to, one middle school had results, 18 months to 2 years ahead of rival schools, in a school system that had students really, controlling their own learning. And a lot of that success comes from intrinsic motivation.
Yeah. So do you think authenticity and relevancy really kills stickers?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
One high school in Auckland bases most of what it does around direct community involvement.
Yeah.
So the students feel like they're actually making a difference. I'll just give a shout out to a great friend of mine, Steve Moldy. He's at Geo Moldy on Twitter. And he's an amazing guy for taking you through how a combination of design thinking and authentic community involvement produces students who are just motivated to do great work.
And what about those students who've been in a system where it has been very extrinsically focused with extrinsic motivation? How do you change or guide those students into learning with the intrinsic motivation?
One school I went to on the South Island in New Zealand really kind of launched a full new open plan, student-driven system kind of overnight, really.
Yeah.
With the proviso that if they really pulled away from teacher control, there would be an embedding period. So there was a month where the students, half the students at least, were really struggling to build habits of how I move my own work forward.
Yeah.
But within a month, it's a skill that you learn, and even students who you might think given full freedom might drift off.
Yeah.
And really think, well, this is great because I can just chill out and do nothing. After a few days of trying to chill out doing nothing, they even youngsters they do. You do find they want to get on and do stuff, and so they sit there and they're one day, day four, they're saying to themselves, well, actually, I'd rather do something. And because the teachers made a point of not trying to really sort of hover over them too much, it became an intrinsically motivated environment. But it does take an embedding period. But unless you really, unless you're brave enough to really pull back as teachers and say, look, this is a skill that the students have got to practice and develop, and there's, you can't, a lot of that intrinsic stuff can't be taught. It's not like just has to be. It has to be developed through experience. So unless,
do you think it's a bit of mindset as well?
Oh, it is. It definitely it is. It's, but unless you're given as a student, unless you're given that freedom, like in a real, like authentic sense, you're never going to develop that skill. And so there's a lot of high school teachers that, that moan about what they say are relatively, you know, dependent 18-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah.
And because they go through a system of having each element of each hour, you know, issued to them. You will pay, turn to page 35, you will answer the following questions, and there will be a test in 2 weeks' time. And we in that sense, our structures babysit them, and they become, they learn to become dependent.
I know when you look at schools' values, and schools have various slogans around their school about what they're all about, you quite often see the terms lifelong learners. You know, we're striving to develop lifelong learners. And I recently was listening to Ijihan Shimizu. I've probably done a bad job on his name, but in a podcast. And he's done a study about what makes people happy and about happiness. And I was relating that to learning because, that you know, you can buy stuff and you get an initial happiness and then it wears off. And you can lots of things bring pleasure, but they don't actually bring happiness. And I think external motivation is a bit like that. At the time, you get some pleasure, but it wears off. Whereas something that's intrinsically motivated brings you lasting happiness. And he was actually saying with happiness, people who do kind things for other people and all that sort of thing, they get a lot more lifelong happiness than people who go out and buy lots of things and get that instant gratification, and, and it doesn't last long. And people... He himself was really wealthy, but he found he just wasn't happy getting happiness because he just had everything. And he went and did a whole lot of work with people helping them and found he got real great long-lasting happiness. So I think, you know, for our learning and our intrinsic motivation, I think it has that same quality. When kids get that really great feeling of when they've accomplished something and it's intrinsic and they know that they've done a great job and they've, you know, really developed... It's much lasting, longer lasting than, say, you know, they've been given something or points or they've got the sticker or something, isn't it?
I don't think we can talk about this topic without mentioning Daniel Pink. If the listeners haven't read his book called Drive, I highly recommend it. It's an entire book on what truly motivates people.
Yeah.
Bestseller, top 50.
Did he do Punishment by Rewards?
And he... I'm not sure, but the Drive book is excellent, and he goes obviously he uses part of it is on schools, and I think to give you an example, it's the he highlights how that sense of reward will wear off if a reward is pre-promised. So if you're working towards an award that you've been promised, it turns what you're doing into work. So it's like receiving a salary, you're working because of that reward. He says one of the best forms of genuine reward is a surprised award where you didn't know it was arriving.
Yeah.
And I can give you the basic example of that happens every day is when a student is blogging and they receive a genuine comment from a stranger.
Yeah.
Particularly if it comes from another country.
Yeah.
All the schools that are doing a significant amount of blogging will all report that that comments from outside the classroom, even if it's family members, can have that can build on that sense of intrinsic motivation. It really they really feel like it's making a difference.
You know yourself on a blog you might have yourself. If you get a post, someone comments that. Is out of your circle, it really does boost you. It even makes you do another post. It can really motivate you to keep going, whereas, you know, before it gets a bit hard slog sometimes on a blog, and some just one comment like that can really push you. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's that need for surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wouldn't want it organized.
I would take you through, if you want, his example where he took his test, or one part of the test was he found elementary kids who generally stayed indoors during break time, during recess, I think they call it, doing art. And so what they did was they gathered from across the school, they gathered all of the students who chose to do art during recess.
Yeah.
And they divided them into three, with one, with a third of them, they did nothing and left them to carry on. A third of them, they promised rewards for great artwork.
Yes.
And then the third lot, they surprised them with rewards afterwards. And it managed to, the third that were promised rewards, within, I think, a month or something, were within 6 weeks, had stopped doing art.
Mm-hmm.
It actually turned a genuine love for art into work.
Mm-hmm. It became work.
As you say, the promised rewards can kill intrinsic motivation. So there you go. Highly recommend Drive by Daniel Pink.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that.
No problem, guys.
Did you have a question, Rodney?
You know what? He has answered a whole lot of questions already today. So
I've also been shopping with Jenny, so I deserve a big break now. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
We hope you enjoyed our interview, our Ubercast interview with Richard Wells, and we'll look forward to speaking to you next time in AU to the AZ. Bye for now.